We're back, back once again right here at Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knowles Network at PRN.FM. And Dr. Zamperone and I are happy to bring you the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. We air live every Tuesday at 10 to 11 a.m. And we love to hear from you. Visit us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, to let us know what you like and maybe things you'd like to hear about here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And, of course, you can visit the archives anytime by going to prn.fm. And I know a lot of you do because we have well over 100,000 visits and downloads and listen-tos, whatever those are called, to our podcasts right here on Progressive Radio Network. And today we're very happy to have as our guest Caroline Dow. Caroline is an award-winning Boulder, Colorado author, and she got awards from the BEA Latino, INATS, and Colorado Authors League, as well as other awards, and she has 16 books in print, so she is a busy author. She also holds a PhD in Luso-Brazilian Studies, speaks four languages, and has lived and traveled throughout Latin America and Europe. She writes both fiction and nonfiction under her name, Carolyn Dow, and also as her pseudonym or writing name as Morwin. And she has a lot of topics, such as tea leaf reading, the physical benefits of tea drinking, herbs, Brazilian folk religions, aromatherapy, Wicca, and magic. She also writes Latina Amateur Sleuths and is working on a historical mystery set in Mexico City. And today I have one of Carolyn's books in front of me, beautiful new book called The Healing Power of Tea, Simple Teas and Tisanes to Remedy and Rejuvenate Your Health. So thank you so much for joining us today, Carolyn.
Well, thank you.
Caroline. You say Caroline, correct?
Caroline, yes.
Because I have friends who have that name, and they seem to pronounce it both ways. So we'll use it correctly for you.
Okay.
So let's go back in time, and let's talk about what brought you to this very interesting life path of so much travel, study, and writing.
Well, I guess I've always wanted to be a writer. I wrote my first mystery novel when I was 10 years old. It was 45 pages typed. So I guess I've always wanted to be a writer. But, you know, I started out by being a foreign exchange student to Mexico. And then, you know, I got that travel and living bug, and I ended up then going to attend UNAM, the National University of Mexico City, for a while, and majoring in Latin American studies, and, you know, it just went on from there. So living and traveling around the world is what I've done most of my life.
Now, so it's interesting, isn't it, that you had this desire to be a writer from very early age. And I'm sure back then, which happened to me as well, we really know what cut and paste means.
Oh, yes.
Right? So what you would probably do is write something, lay it on the floor, get a scissor, cut the various paragraphs, and then rearrange them because you go, well, this one would have been better here. That's what I did.
Yeah.
You pasted it all together, usually with scotch tape, and then you had to redo the whole entire thing.
You have to retype everything all over again. That was in the old days, yes. Computers are a lot easier.
It has come a long way. It's really funny how the words progress and, you know, change in terms of meaning. So that first book that you wrote, you said that was more of a novel?
That's when I was a child, yeah.
So it was a short story.
It was a little mystery novel, yeah, and then I wrote a little mystery play and, you know, all that because I was involved in theater when I was a child. I did a lot of children's theater sort of thing at sort of a well-known children's theater place in Detroit, and then I went on to, you know, doing, you know, writing books, fiction, nonfiction. It's, of course, easier to get the nonfiction published, so that's why I have so many nonfiction books in print. But my mother was a librarian. She was a children's librarian, so I've always read books and had books put in front of me and been able to choose, you know, been fortunate enough to be guided as far as reading is concerned.
Now, how did the interest in Wicca develop in your life? Was that also from a young age, or was there an occurrence that led you to look into Wicca and magic?
Well, what it was my father was an unusual person. He was conservative in many ways, but one of the things that he thought was that that we only used about 10% of our brains, and we only didn't use hardly any of our right side of our brain. And he used to talk about this often, you know, when we were having on our summer vacations, driving around the country, and, you know, I really paid attention. And he said, you know, that the last frontier was really the mind, not space, you know, and things like that. And so I started to get involved with that. And then I picked up a book on palmistry when I was about 10. It was by Elizabeth Daniel Squires, whom I met later. I can't believe I met her much later, like in 2000. But anyway, it was a book on palmistry, and I got sort of interested in that. My great aunt was a tea leaf reader, and so she read all the leaves for the family and everything, and, you know, I got more and more interested. And then when I got to, when I got to university, I think it was in graduate school, there was a place called the Pentagram. And it was, you know, sold Wicca items and things for, things for developing the psychic side of your intuitive side of your brain. And I got interested there, and there was a lady who was offering a mail order course, and she was a high priestess, and I took the course, and she came out, and eventually, you know, she looked at about 9 people and said, you, you know, one Sunday afternoon when we were having a little soiree, you know, show up at Black Robes Tuesday night, and we were initiated. So that's how I got involved.
Noel, you had developed an interest in it, and you pursued it, and you use different pen names depending on if you, what would decide if you would use Morwen or Caroline Dow?
Well, Morwen would be more of the Wicca and the magic, ceremonial magic, things like that that I write about. It's my Wicca name. Caroline Dow is my name, and so I have books on other things that I do. For example, you know, since I have a doctorate in Elizabethan studies and was a university professor at places like Brown and Pittsburgh and places, that's very different. You know, it's a different environment. So I use a different name. I use my other name. And plus, I was an intercultural trainer and assessor in corporate America for many years, too. So that's how I use the Caroline Dow name for those kinds of books. And then the Wicca, pure Wicca magic books, it's Morwen.
Yeah, and I do a similar thing because I have a pen name of Rainbow Feather.
Oh, really? Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, for my more esoteric writing, like one book that I wrote called Synchronous Connections, A Personal Journey Through Non-Ordinary Reality.
Oh, beautiful. So, how did you get your name?
Well, that is an interesting story. Actually, that was during the Harmonic Convergence in 1987.
Oh, yes.
I was creating a mandala to do a ceremony on that date. And every single day I walked in the woods, and it was a very strange thing, on my path where I walk every single day in the woods always, were dead animals.
Oh, gosh.
It was just very interesting. There was a fox there one day. There was an owl. There were blue jays. There were cardinals. Every day was a different animal.
Oh,
and
my.
I actually collected them, went to a taxidermist, and then I used either their feathers or, in the case of the fox, fur in the creation of this Quetzalcoatl, which is a rainbow-feathered serpent that you're probably familiar with.
Oh, yes.
So I put all of their feathers and different animal parts on this Quetzalcoatl, and then I had an artist friend of mine seal it with see-through clear covering. It was big. This was a big thing. It could hardly fit in the car when I went to do the ceremony on the harmonic convergence. So during that period of time, I basically was told by these animals that I was collecting, because I found them already dead, sometimes still warm. It was very interesting. And I didn't kill any of them. They just presented themselves to me to be used in this way. And that's, they actually told me that that is your name, Rainbow Feather, and please, you know, use this consciously, this gift that we give you. So, you know, that's another whole thing versus when I say Ellen Kamai, because I also am an instructor in a university and have written many, many books that are peer-reviewed and evidence-based and all that kind of stuff. So I very much understand. And when you aren't representing the various parts of yourself, you actually change in terms of your internal reflection, I find.
Yes, I think that's true as well. And that's basically what I do as well. So they're both parts of me, but they you know, have different audiences and different ways of presentation.
Now, I love your book that we do actually have right here to talk about the healing power of tea, and we will talk about that. But first, I'd like to digress a little bit to tea leaf reading.
Oh, yes.
So what is that?
Well, it's a way of actually accessing the intuitive side of your brain, and oftentimes, you know, they say, well, everybody wants to know the future, what the future will bring, and maybe, you know, this is true, but oftentimes we actually already know what's going to be going on, and through the tea leaf reading, we focus our minds in a different way, you know, using the right side of the brain in order to, you know, to bring forth from our subconscious minds, you know, ideas, things that might be, you know, attitudes, things like that, that would show a propensity to what might, you know, happen in the future.
So it's a divination tool.
Basically. It's a divination tool.
One of many.
It's a very short way of saying it, yes, very concise.
Well, because there's different ways. And my grandmother, who was from Greece, was an herbalist, and I'm following in her footpaths. So she actually did midwifery and helped people deliver babies at home, and she also was a tea reader.
Oh, really? Oh,
and
cool.
I never learned that, but she used to actually, other people came over her house, I have to say mostly women. I don't know if that's been true for you or if you've had men.
Mostly women, but sometimes when I get a man who is really intuitive, he seems to be even better than most of the women, you know, the occasional guy that comes through. So there are men who do it as well. And some of the men who have written some of the best books on tea leaf reading. I mean, there are men who have written great books on tea leaf reading. So,
and let's say, how does that go? If somebody were to visit someone like yourself or another tea leaf reader, what happens?
Well, first of all, what you have to do is everybody needs to relax. And that's part of what tea leaf reading is all about. It takes time to brew the tea, because what you have to do is wait for the leaves to get fat, you know, while you're brewing. You need to drink the tea. And, you know, while you're drinking the tea, you know, you put aside your busy daily life. You drink the liquid. You need to upend the cup, let the water drain out, you know, after you finish it. Drinking it, and then you're able to then put the cup right side up again and read the leaves. It takes a while, and during that time, people often let down their barriers. They start talking about their lives, you know, take time to examine, talk about life's great questions. So it's just a great way for people. It's a cheap form of entertainment because all you need is a little bit of tea, a cup, and some hot water. And, you know, you're in business, and family and friends can gather around, and it really is fun and entertaining, as well as a way to access the spiritual side of your life.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, it's low cost, and it's very organic because we're talking about tea.
Yes.
Now, in your new book, The Healing Power of Tea, you talk about different teas and their healing properties, and they may be... one person would use one kind of tea for relaxation, another kind of tea for energy. What about in tea leaf reading? Is any kind of tea okay, or does there have to be only one kind used?
Oh, you can use just about anything. You can use herbal herbs as well. Oftentimes, I will say, and some people have misinterpreted it, this, that, you know, can use peppermint for if you have questions having to do with money and prosperity, chamomile if you're talking about questions of health, rose hips or and lavender if you're talking about love, things like that. You don't have to use any of those. They're just, you know, fun themed teas that, you know, have those kinds of qualities that, you know, that you can use. But I think that, well, for example, you can use gunpowder green tea will give you a few large bold images. So they're really good for one question readings. If you're using a black tea, which is generally has, will give you tiny, but more lacy, more images. They're good for people who have busy lifestyles or who have multiple questions that they want to have answered, or if you're doing a reading for somebody for a year-long reading, that kind of thing, because you'll get a lot out of black tea, less out of green tea, and less out of white tea. So it just depends on what you're going for. And of course, some people can't stand the caffeine in tea, in black tea at all. So a white tea or an herbal would be better for them.
Well, that's from the tea leaf point of view. Let's move now into the book, The Healing Power of Tea.
Yes.
And you and I did another radio show, because we have many radio shows through the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and you listeners can find them at naturalnurse.com. And today, of course, we're on the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. Now, you had mentioned something that was brand new to me, and I've been an herbalist since 1964 and often use tea as healing modalities with patients in our clinic, but I never heard something that you shared with me, which I was really interested in, and that was the fact that in your book, The Healing Power of Tea, you talk about the fact that the actual use of the word tea is more correctly only for discussing something that comes from the Camellia sinensis plant, which is black tea, green tea, white tea. And the word tea really shouldn't be used for other things, such as herb tea, like chamomile and peppermint. I never heard that before.
Oh, well, you know, I do the Rocky Mountain Tea Festival at the Dushanbe Tea House every year. It's an international festival that goes on, and you get a lot of tea purists, people who are really, you know, who come from China, who come from, you know, all over the world, and they can get, you know, anybody who is into their field, you know, they want to have specific, correct vocabulary to use. And some people get annoyed if you say, you know, herbal tea when you're talking about an herbal infusion. But, you know, in the popular parlance, when everybody's just talking, just normal people walking around, will say herbal tea. And I do certainly say herbal tea in the Healing Power of Tea book, but I do describe that it really isn't a tea, it's an herbal infusion. Tea can only come from one bush, the Camellia sinensis bush.
Just fascinating. Well, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion with Caroline Dow. She's a fascinating person, as I'm sure you have figured out by this time, and you can look for her books. What's the best place to find you and the work that you do?
Well, you can find me at www.carolinedowbooks.com, and I describe my books and I blog there and I have a little video there, do many things on
Perfect.
My website.
And we do have that, by the way, listed with your bio once this show is archived. Anyone can go there and just quickly click on it as well. So we will be right back with more right now on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935, but it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
To more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm your host today, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and I co-host this show with Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and today and together we are The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we do many things that we'd love you to join in with us. For instance, we've written many books. You can go to naturalnurse.com and click on books. And they make very good presents also as we move towards the holiday season. One is called The Natural Medicine Chest, and that's about how to use herbs for yourself and your family for various health issues, doing self-care, creating wellness. And we have a book called Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. It's one of the top-selling books on how to create a lifestyle that squelches inflammation, and that, of course, leads to better results and better outcomes with every kind of disease, especially anything that relates to pain. We have a book called Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, and that seems to get to be more and more of a big issue every single year around the holiday season because people tend to overdo it. And then we have a book called Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women, which talks about such things as menopause, pregnancy, birth control, just women's wellness issues in general. And I also have a book called The Natural Guide to Great Sex, which does talk about herbs to increase passion as well as healthy recipes and ancient Taoist techniques and exercises that you can use if that's an area of your life you would like to energize. So all kinds of things go on there, as well as classes where we teach you in person, as well as herbal certification classes that are available online. So give us a visit at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Caroline Dow. She is an award-winning author. She is a PhD, so she is Dr. Caroline Dow, as well as Morwen, which is the side that she uses in terms of writing about Wiccan and magic. And today, we are taking a really close look at her beautiful book, The Healing Power of Tea. And there's beautiful, beautiful tea on the cover. Caroline, what are the teas that are featured in those nice cups that are on the cover of the book?
Well, I'm not 100% sure because I'm not the one who came up with the cover design, but just looking at them, I think that we have here some black tea, which can present orange in the cup. I'll probably have a green tea, which although some green teas present green in the cup, others present yellow, and this is sort of like a combination of green and yellow. I see probably an herbal tea or herbal infusion like rooibos, because that can be, you know, quite red, either that or hibiscus on what they use there. And the other tea could be an oolong. The one on the right might be an oolong tea.
So now, just to review briefly, because we talked about this a little bit before, when we use the word tea, the most correct way to go about that, not that I'm saying you should do this, listeners, or even that I will do this in the future, but it's great to know.
Or that I.
Or that you don't even, and you wrote the book.
Right.
But that the correct way to use that tea word actually refers to something from the Camellia sinensis plant, which is still many different kinds of beverages. So let's talk about what is the difference between black tea, green tea, white tea, oolong, and those varieties of teas.
Right. There are many differences, you know, subtle differences, but the major one has to do with the oxidation process. That is how long the leaves are allowed to ferment before they are withered and fermented before they are dried and, you know, made into the tea. Least processed leaves are white teas. The most processed leaves are the black teas. As they oxidize further, you will get more tannins, which give you taste, and you will get more caffeine. So black has more caffeine, whereas white has the least amount of caffeine, hardly any caffeine at all.
And so the color aspect of those names are not necessarily, you know, like you said, black tea doesn't really show up as black in the cup.
It's, well, only if you overbrew it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which I think English people tend to do.
Yes, they do.
Not. I love my English friends, but when they make tea, it seems like it just looks like coffee almost. It's so dark.
Well, I have a funny, actually, I have a little side story to tell about that, because I used to live in Britain, and my husband was teaching a faculty in Swansea, Wales at the college there, and I had a tea for the university wives, and I had just gone down into the village where I lived, and I'd bought Twinings Earl Grey tea, but I only brew it very lightly, and when they drank the tea, they said, oh, this is so wonderful, is this an American tea? You know, they thought that maybe I was giving a special kind of tea, because I said, no, I just don't brew it as strongly as you guys do.
Yeah, they really go with that dark, dark flavor.
Yes.
So also on the front of your book, part of the title is Simple Teas and Tisanes. That's T-I-S-A-N-E-S.
Right.
What are tisanes?
Well, it's the same as an herbal infusion, or, you know, what we popularly call an herbal tea. That's, you can either say herbal infusion or you can say tisane. It probably was put as the subtitle because it rhymes with tea, you know, tea, T, teas on, you know, kind of thing. But it really is just an herbal infusion. You know, if you think of the mystery novels with Hercule Poirot, the great Belgian detective of Agatha Christie fame, he used to have his teas on all the time. And those are just really herbal infusions, herbal teas.
So that would be something like, it would be called a peppermint tisane or a chamomile tisane.
Exactly, or a combination. You know, you can have, you know, rose hips and lavender, peppermint or whatever you want to put together. You know, you can make blends of herbal infusions, I guess, herbal teas.
Well, you have many different functional categories of teas that perhaps some of our listeners aren't familiar with. For instance, what is an RTD tea?
Oh, yeah, people actually should be familiar with that. It's called ready-to-drink. That's what RTD stands for, ready-to-drink tea. So that's when you go to the grocery store and you see these teas already, you know, packaged in bottles. And some of them will have some vitamins in them, you know, like trace amounts of vitamins. People like to drink them as sports drinks. Most RTD teas, in my opinion, but it's popular, people like them, are sweetened, you know, with sugar or, you know, sugar-type sweeteners. And so that's what most of the RTD teas are, but they're very popular.
Well, in terms of sugar, although I'm not a big advocate of using quite a bit of that, I would say that's actually less harmful than when they say sugar-free.
Yes.
Because sugar-free does not mean sweetener-free. Sugar-free or light, those are buzzwords to read your labels carefully because you're going to have potentially highly toxic artificial sweeteners involved there in most cases.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right about that. And I'm really against that as well. But I don't, frankly, although it was suggested to me at the editorial board that I say positive things about sugar, and so I do in the book, you know, talk about how it gives energy and things like that. I personally don't ever put any sugar at all in my tea because what it does is it adulterates the flavor, and I want to have the flavor of the tea. And plus, it's very, very bad for your teeth and for your weight and all kinds of things, as you know. But artificial sweeteners are even worse.
Yeah, they are really treacherous. But anyway, not to digress too much, one of the things I love is your Chapter 6 in the book, The Healing Power of Tea, because you actually have an ailment from A to Z list.
Okay.
And so what you do is you list sort of different problems, health issues, and then you just list the teas that may be useful, and then people can look back in the book for more information about those specific teas.
Right, exactly. Yep.
It's funny, we do the exact same thing in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest. So you have something, let's choose one. Like, how about anxiety? Because that's something that so many people suffer from, and I really, really would recommend highly first using tea and then perhaps more concentrated herbal remedies before you go to a pharmaceutical for this kind of event in someone's life.
Exactly. Well, you know, and for the anxiety, what I have, and you can list more than what I have. I just have a few listed here. I have passion flower, St. John's wort, valerian, and hawthorn berries. You can use any of those. And then you can use them as a tea, but for example, St. John's wort can also be used in a salve. I mean, this is not a tea. Obviously, you're not going to eat it, but you can be used in a salve to rub on your temples, you know, like, you know, when you feel stressed. I have a good friend who makes St. John's wort salve, and that works very well for that, for anxiety. You know, other things that you could have in there that I don't list are catmint, for example, you know, what we call catnip. That would be great for anxiety as well. It is really calming. You know, also is chamomile, you know, things like other herbs as well.
So if someone did find that they were having anxiety, and we're not talking here about severe depression and that kind of thing, but you're going through a period of your life and for whatever reason you're feeling anxious, particularly women when they go through menopause sometimes have unexplained heart palpitations. They wake up at 3 a.m. And this is a very useful list if you did just look at passion flower, St. John's wort, valerian, and hawthorn berries. So how would they be used as a tea?
Well, you would just brew them. You could, for example, take passion flower and just use one teaspoonful of it and on its own as a single herbal infusion and see how you like that. And then what you might do then is if you like that or you want to do a little something a little different, maybe you want to do a half a teaspoon of passion flower, half a teaspoon of St. John's wort. And then, you know, you just do one teaspoonful per cup of tea, but you can, you know, mix and blend whatever you'd like. You know, crush some hawthorn berries, a couple of hawthorn berries, make a quarter teaspoon of that, and a half a passion flower, a quarter of St. John's wort, et cetera, until you find the blend that works the best for you. You can do your what I call designer blending.
Well, you know that the FDA is becoming more and more aggressive and making it more and more difficult to say that any kind of natural remedy can be linked to any kind of medicinal effect. And yet, you certainly seem to be able to do so in this book. And in books in general, we still seem to be able to do so as well as on the radio. But one of the things you're not really doing is saying a specific brand.
No, right, exactly. Well, because you just can get the herbs and do it yourself and design that make them yourself. You know, you don't have to go to a specific brand, but some people like a brand, you know, and then, you know, if you like that brand, you use that brand, if that works for you. In general, I think that herbal teas are, although they're useful, they're supplemental and supportive more than anything else, and you have to take that into consideration as well. You also need to take into consideration the psychological uses. And I mean, if you believe something is going to work for you, you know, just like a placebo, it may work for you, and that's not a bad thing. You know, that's good as well. In fact, in the new book that I'm working on right now, What's Your Potion, Liquid Refreshments to Nourish Body, Mind, and Spirit, in that manuscript, I do talk about, you know, the psychological benefits of teas, but also other, you know, fruits and vegetables, you know, and smoothies and juices and things like that.
Yeah, and there are things that people can easily just decide to add into their life.
Exactly.
And I think you do a wonderful job in this book saying what some of the studies are and even things like, you know, how about things that you should avoid?
Yes, that's definitely not every herb is good for you, for example. And also, you know, if you're choosing your own, if you're you know, if you're going to go wild crafting, you don't want to take herbs that grow on the roadside because they can be contaminated, etc.
Well, let me ask you this. I think that's true. I think that's true. But how do we know as consumers where any particular product is really gathered?
Well,
you know,
that's
but you're making the choice yourself. That's what I do. I'll find the plant. I'll go, okay, it grows around here, and then even if it is on the side of the road, I'll walk into the field so that I'm a certain distance away. And, of course, I'd even prefer to go way out in the wild. But then I always wonder, what about who's ever gathering it on a commercial level and putting it in the store?
Well,
we don't really know where it's from.
Well, that's a problem we all have with everything, and that's why a lot of people are trying to get, you know, GMO labeling and things like that. Even organic farmers of any sort of thing, because of genetically modified crops that might grow nearby and the way pollen, you know, disperses in the air, you cannot be entirely certain that you are, you know, pesticide free, genetically modified free, or anything like that. It's going to be more and more of a problem for us all on all levels. Unfortunately.
It's a sad statement of our modern culture, but you're certainly right. Now let's go a little bit more deeply into the true tea, which is green tea. Because I would say every one of our listeners, in fact, almost every magazine, you know, even just the real splashy rags that are in the grocery store, almost every day they have something about the miraculous anti-cancer treatment therapies or all kinds of really pretty wild claims about green tea. And some of that actually is substantiated by pretty good research.
Yeah, well, you know, some studies point to green tea, you know, as benefiting the digestion. They also add trace amounts of amino acids and vitamins to the diet. So therefore, you know, they can boost the immune system. Green tea can sharpen the memory and possibly mitigate the effects of some cancers. You know, some studies have been done having to do with that and some pretty good studies. But, you know, you have to would have to be drinking a lot of it, maybe drinking in extract form for it to, you know, to really, you know, to catch on or drink it often. A couple of the claims that are made about green tea, however, science is sort of, you know, wavering on. For example, curing breast cancer, they're now starting to say, well, that may not be true. And also as a weight loss supplement, maybe it works for some people, but for others, you know, maybe not. You know, the claims are yet to be proved. But, you know, as I always say, it's better to, you know, drink, it is health, green tea is healthy for you, so, you know, why not try it? I mean, it's better than drinking a soda or alcohol, for sure.
It's so true. And I tell people in terms of weight loss, and even in my book, which is titled Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Guide, you know, in terms of one little thing, yes, drink green tea, change your diet, exercise half an hour a day, and you'll see a difference. And that's really if you drink the green tea or not. Although it certainly is proven to have some kind of upregulation effect, which might be called thermogenic. But if you continue to eat all kinds of fattening foods and remain sedentary, just drinking tea is not going to suddenly make you three sizes smaller.
Exactly. Too bad, but it's true.
Yeah, too bad. It would be nice. So we're going to take another little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and you will hear about lots of the wonderful shows that are available for your download and listening pleasure here on Progressive Radio Network 24/7. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with our guest today, Caroline Dow, the author of The Healing Power of Tea and the author of many, many other books as well. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best. And you can join us in person by going to naturalnurse.com, click on schedule, and you will see where we are doing presentations that you can join in on. This summer, we're usually in the New York area where we go outside and do outside plant identification and medicine-making workshops. And in the winter, we do the same in Florida. We also have online classes, basically 24/7, that you can join in with us to learn more about how to use natural therapies such as herbs, homeopathics, healthy foods, and other natural therapies to help yourself and your family the natural alternatives way. And you can visit us at naturalnurse.com or at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Today we have as our guest Caroline Dow, who is a very accomplished author, as you can see, and she has written, well, as you can see if you've been listening to the show up to this point, and we're talking in particular about her book, The Healing Power of Tea, Simple Teas and Tisanes to Remedy and Rejuvenate Your Health. And you know, Caroline, one of the things we do in our on-ground classes is we take people twice a year to a sacred Chinese tea ceremony in Chinatown, New York. where we actually sit down and we get served tea. And they have a very involved ritual. They don't just throw a bag in and add hot water.
Right, right, right. It's the Gung Fu way of serving tea. It is not as ritualized as the Japanese tea ceremony. It is more relaxed, but it's certainly, there are all these different ways to do it. I remember going to one of those ceremonies in Portland, Oregon, and it's really, really beautiful and really, really fun. And I highly recommend it. The tea that they oftentimes use for that ceremony is called Ti Kuan Yin. And it's named for the Chinese iron goddess of compassion. And it's probably the most famous oolong tea. It's an oolong tea that means it's partially oxidized tea. It's something between a green tea and a black tea. And it's also called monkey-picked oolong because there's a legend that Buddhist monks train monkeys to pick the delicate leaves. So that's why it's called monkey-picked oolong.
Yeah, and that's such a great story that they tell. But it's very beautiful. Everyone sits down, and they have these little tiny cups.
Yes.
And then they do something called wake up the tea leaves. And the tea leaves are not ground. They're whole leaves.
Yes.
So after they add the hot water, they take one out and show everyone. And they're also very involved with what they call smelling the tea, not only drinking the tea, almost how people do with excellent wines.
Yes, aroma is a big part of tea, and it, you know, it can have like, well, that particular tea has slight floral notes, but it's also, you know, full-bodied and vegetal as well, and so, you know, you want to get the aroma because aroma is part of taste. And as an oolong tea, you said that they use the whole leaves. All oolong teas are whole leaf teas. They have not been crushed at all or twisted or anything like that. That's when oolong tea is. They can be infused several times. And each time you infuse the tea leaves, you get a different complexity of aroma and of flavor. So that's where you kind of sniff it and then you taste it.
Yeah, so they make it a whole, you know, they said it has to do also with getting the family to sit down together and discuss things. Of course, that doesn't always happen in today's busy lifestyle, but it's really, really enjoyable. And also looking at the history of tea, and there, of course, those teas are the ones where we're using the word tea completely legally, according to the tea specialists.
Yes, exactly.
Now, what about people who really don't prefer the taste, let's say, of green tea?
Well, for them, for people who don't care for tea or who don't want the caffeine, you can always go to herbal infusions. If you have a former coffee drinker or a coffee drinker who wants to try some sort of tea, I always recommend, you know, roasted chicory root or roasted chicory or roasted dandelion root, you know, that kind of thing, or a combination of the two. Together, and so you can drink that.
And chicory has quite a long history of being a coffee substitute, as does dandelion, and we actually have recipes for how to gather it and make your own out of that as well. And I think during wartime, when it was difficult to get coffee imported, there was quite a bit of use of that.
Yes, that started out in the United States anyway during the war between the states, where, you know, the Southerners couldn't get coffee, and so they turned to chicory because of that, and that is actually how the New Orleans brand of Louisiane, you know, they have a line that includes chicory blended with coffee, how that came about, and is still very popular today.
Do you remember the old coffee substitute that used to be very prevalent in the health food stores called Postum?
Yes, I remember that from my grandmother used to drink it.
Right.
Yeah.
It had a very rich, delicious flavor and included chicory. And
yes.
So I don't know what happened to it today. It doesn't seem to be around. But you have all kinds of other very interesting teas mentioned in your book, The Healing Power of Tea, such as brassica tea.
That's
one I never even heard about. What is that?
Well, it's basically a tea that comes from the broccoli, you know, but don't think that it doesn't really taste like broccoli. And there is a company that, you know, who makes the brassica tea, and it's supposed to be very, very good for you. You know, it's got all kinds of, you know, good vitamins and things like that into it. It was actually developed in Johns Hopkins University because they were trying to isolate the antioxidant in broccoli. The antioxidant that battles, you know, free radicals and keeps them from destroying cells in the body, you know, leads to cancer, that sort of thing. And so they would add this element, you know, that they isolated. They called SGS for short. They added it to tea. You can add it to various kinds of green teas because it seemed to harmonize best with green teas, taste best with that. So you don't get the broccoli taste in it, you know, you just get, you get the nutritional boost in it, and plus you get, you know, the nutrition that's in green tea as well. So it's, you know, the people that are enthusiastic about it say that it's one of the healthiest teas on the planet.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. It actually can be added in. It's the molecule sulforaphane, which certainly has tons of evidence-based research behind its beneficial effects, and it's one of the reasons that eating those kinds of brassical vegetables is also so excellent. But this is a way to expand upon your ingestion of that by adding it to tea.
Yeah.
So there's so many interesting tips in your book and very colorful language, like you talk about something called Dragonwell tea.
Yes, right, Dragonwell tea. There are actually, it's one of the earliest known Chinese green teas. Well, you know, most tea was green, you know, centuries ago. And there are six grades of it. And the very best grade, remember how I say that, you know, it depends on how long something is oxidized, but there are other elements that come into making different kinds of teas. And this particular green tea is hand-tossed in special iron pans, you know, to dry it. And it comes, when you drink it, it has a beautiful yellow, clear yellow color, almost like the gem citrine. So, you know, it's really, it's good for, you know, it's supposed to help with cancers like cancers of the esophagus. It got to be very popular. It was the tea that, remember, oh, well, you probably don't, but years ago when Nixon visited China, it was the tea that he was presented with. And so Dragonwell became popular then because that was the tea that Nixon got when he did his big trip to China many years ago.
So then it was mentioned, and it's quite a picturesque kind of name.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And then you have other things like gunpowder tea.
Yes, that's because gunpowder tea is another green tea. It's one that you use in tea leaf reading for single question readings because it makes just very few but bold images on the inside of the cup, you know, so you can interpret those. But the green tea is rolled into what looks like little pellets, which then when you add the hot water to them, they expand and, you know, loosen up. But the little pellets kind of look, and they look kind of grayish, and so, or they're little pearls. They're also called pearl tea in China, and they look a little bit like gunpowder. So that's why they're called, you know, gunpowder tea, but it's not really gunpowder. For the best gunpowder tea, if you want to go, you know, buy that somewhere, the more tightly rolled the pellets are, the better the grade of the gunpowder tea.
Boy, there's just so many details to know, and people think they understood tea, but once they read your book, they certainly would have a much deeper understanding, and of course, all the information you have in here about medicinal use and brewing properties. It's just extremely complex, but very easy to use the way you have it presented in your book, The Healing Power of Tea. And we're going to come to the end of our show here, but I do want you to mention something that really has a much more fruity flavor, which is rooibos and honeybush.
Yes, rooibos is very fruity tasting. It comes from a bush that originally was grown in one area of South Africa and sort of like a hilly area of South Africa. Now it's grown in other places around the world. Honey, and it is under cultivation. But honey bush, which is has some different properties, but it looks the same and tastes similar in the cup, that's only wildcrafted from South Africa, and it's grown just south of where the rooibos is. The rooibos is supposed to be good for skin cancer, is its major claim to fame.
And it's very tangy and pretty. It's like a
yes.
pinker color in the cup.
Mm-hmm, it is. Oftentimes, though, it is. Sometimes the flavor can be kind of astringent, so it is oftentimes you'll find it blended with, you know, citrus or with, you know, other kinds of herbs, you know, to make it a sweeter tasting tea.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today right here on The Natural Nurse. And Dr. Z and listeners, you can find Carolyn's show on our archive. You can find her at carolinedowbooks.com. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, along with my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. We are wishing you the best. Stay healthy.